Trat partito jagati putra padam chalebe. Dugdha vasuni vasudha sakalani yena. Yadvena mutpatagatam vijavakya vajra. Nishplushta porusha bhagam niraye patantam. Tratvartito jagati putra padam chalebe. Dugdha vasuni vasudha sakalani yena.
Went astray from the path of righteousness. And the Brahmins chastised him by the thunderbolt curse. By this, King Vena was burnt with his good deeds and opulence and was en route to hell. The Lord, by his causeless mercy, descended as his son by the name of Prithu, delivered the king, the condemned King Vena, from hell, and exploited the earth by drawing all kinds of crops as produce. Purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. According to the system of Varnashram Dharma, the pious and learned Brahmins were the natural guardians of society. The Brahmins, by their learned labor of love, would instruct the administrator kings how to rule the country in complete righteousness. And thus the process would go on as a perfect welfare state. The kings or the Kshatriya administrators would always consult the council of learned Brahmins. They were never autocratic monarchs. The scriptures like Manu Samhita and other authorized books of the great sages were guiding principles for ruling the subjects. And there was no need for less intelligent persons to manufacture a code of law in the name of democracy. The less intelligent mass of people have very little knowledge of their own welfare, as a child has very little knowledge of its future well-being. The experienced father guides the innocent child toward the path of progress, and the childlike mass of people needs similar guidance. The standard welfare codes are already there in Manu Samhita and other Vedic literatures. The learned Brahmins would advise the king in terms of those standard books of knowledge, and with reference to the particular situation of time and place. Such Brahmins were not paid servants of the king, and therefore they had the strength to dictate to the king on the principles of scriptures. This system continued up to the time of Maharaj Chandragupta, and the Brahmin Chanakya was his unpaid prime minister. Maharaj Vena did not adhere to this principle of ruling, and he disobeyed the learned Brahmins. The broad-minded Brahmins were not self-interested, but looked to the interest of complete welfare for all the subjects. They wanted to chastise King Vena for his misconduct, and so prayed to the Almighty Lord as well as cursed the king. Long life, obedience, good reputation, righteousness, prospects of being promoted to higher planets, and blessings of great personalities are all vanquished simply by disobedience to a great soul. One should strictly try to follow in the footsteps of great souls. Maharaj Vena became a king, undoubtedly due to his past deeds of righteousness. But because he willfully neglected the great souls, he was punished by the loss of all the above-mentioned acquisitions. In the Vamana Purana, the history of Maharaj Vena and his degradation are fully described. When Maharaj Prithu heard about the hellish condition of his father, Vena, who was suffering from leprosy in the family of a Malecha, he at once brought the former king to Kurukshetra for his purification and relieved him of all sufferings. Maharaj Prithu, the incarnation of God, descended by the prayer of the Brahmins to rectify the disorders on earth. He produced all kinds of crops, but at the same time he performed the duty of a son who delivers his father from hellish conditions. The word putra means one who delivers from hell, called put. That is a worthy son. Yesterday, in the previous sloka from Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Brahma is explaining to Narada Muni how, in reciprocation to the great love and devotion offered by Dhruva Maharaj, under the spiritual guidance of his spiritual master Narada Muni, the Supreme Lord descended as Prishni Garbha and fulfilled all his desires. Dhruva Maharaj, being terribly insulted by his mother, his stepmother, went to the forest in order to understand what is God, with the hope that God would give him the benediction of a kingdom greater than his own father or grandfather. It is very interesting because the greatness and the glory of Guru Dhruva Maharaj came from a terrible and severe crisis in his life. For a Kshatriya to be insulted is worse than death. He was only a child of 5 years old, but that Kshatriya spirit, he was the son of Uttanapada, the grandson of Swayambhuva Manu, the great grandson of Lord Brahma. He felt such deep agony and pain, worse than death. And he had to somehow or other compensate for this great disgrace upon himself. And it was through that tremendous ordeal of tragedy in his life that he came in contact with Narada Muni and was willing to follow the process of bhakti. And through the process of bhakti, he became purified completely of all other intentions or desires and simply became the Lord's surrendered devotee. When Prishni Garbha appeared to him, the Lord Narayan himself, he offered him any benediction. You want kingdom greater than your grandfather Brahma? I can give. Dhruva said, I do not want these things anymore. By chanting your holy name, by remembering you within the core of my heart, by the grace of Narada Muni, my Guru Maharaj, I have become completely purified. And now I am seeing you. I was after broken pieces of glass, and I have attained the rare, beautiful diamond jewel of your darshan. I have no desire. But the Lord, although giving him pure, unmotivated, loving devotion to his lotus feet and that of the Vaishnavas, he instructed Dhruva to perform his duty in Krishna consciousness, and he became the king. Dhruva's son was named Utkala, his eldest son. But this son, following in the footsteps of his father, was completely detached from kingdom or family life, and he became a brahmachari. He just wanted to hear and chant the glories of the Lord. He didn't want to be disturbed by any kingdom or anything like that. So they gave the kingdom to another son, not the one who was actually hereditarily most deserving of the kingdom. And in this way, the descendants of Dhruva Maharaj were very, very great and powerful kings. And one of them is the name Anga. Maharaj Anga was a very, very, very exalted devotee. And he ruled the kingdom in pure God consciousness. And he was, but he had no son. So he was performing a yajna with the help of great, great Brahmins in order to have a son. The idea of having a son is to train the son to be the next king and rule the world according to God-conscious principles in the mood of devotion. But somehow or other, despite chanting all the mantras very properly, none of the devatas would come to receive their offerings. And they tried again and again and again, and it appeared like it was a great failure. So Maharaj Anga asked the Brahmins why the demigods are not coming. They said, every mantra is being perfectly chanted, all our rituals are being perfectly executed, we do not know. In those days when one would perform a yajna, all the various demigods you would call on would come to accept their particular oblation, personally. But in this age of Kali, no Brahmins could chant the mantras properly. Besides that, the paraphernalia required for such rituals is unavailable. And beyond that, this world is such a polluted and sinful place, no demigods want to come here. So therefore, there is only one yajna in this age of Kali Yuga that has any real effect, and that is the Sankirtan of the holy names of Krishna. Because the idea of yajna is to give pleasure to Krishna by your offering. And in this age of Kali Yuga, Krishna finds great pleasure in those who sincerely and humbly chant his holy names. It is the ultimate sacrifice. So they decided that only the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is so merciful, could save them. And King Anga was a great devotee. So they offered an oblation to Lord Vishnu. And they offered with such devotion that Lord Vishnu personally came and appeared in the yajna shala. And of course, when Vishnu came, all the other demigods came who were invited. And along with all the demigods came the Lord's associates, Nanda, Sunanda, and everyone. And Maharaj Prithu, with great humility and devotion, offered his prayers to Lord Narayan. And Lord Narayan explained how Maharaj Anga. And he told Maharaj Anga that you have pleased me, and therefore you will have a son. And then when they performed the next oblation, the Yajna Purusha came out. Vishnu, in the form of a transcendental personality, and he was holding a pot of rice cooked in milk. And Maharaj Anga smelled it and gave it to his wife, whose name was Sunita. And then she drank it. And then by the inconceivable will of the Lord, she became pregnant. And after some time, she gave birth. Sunita gave birth to a child whose name was Vena. And Maharaj Vena, from his childhood, he was a very evil and corrupted person. It is said that Sunita was the daughter of Mrityu, or death personified. And it is the natural way of the world that the son takes on the qualities of the mother's father. And the daughter takes on the qualities of the father's mother, like that.
So because death personified, Vena had very, very cruel qualities. In the Vamana Purana and Padma Purana, there is a very detailed history of how this all came about. And in this way, when he was just a little child, he would go out hunting and just kill innocent animals just for the sake of slaughtering them. And when he would play with his playmates, he would torture them and kill them as a sport. And he harassed everybody. And when the news came to his father, Anga, who was such a righteous and pious person, he tried to do everything within his power to somehow or other reform this wayward son. He would punish him, he would instruct him, he would do everything. But whatever he did, Vena just got worse and worse and worse. He just took such great pleasure in offending people and murdering people and torturing people. And Maharaj Anga, after some time, his heart was filled with sorrow and pain. And he began to think and pray that how fortunate is that person who has no sons? Because there is nothing more terrible and painful than having a bad son. Such distress, such anxiety is consuming my life because this son is so uncontrollably cruel. What is the use of everything? He was Maharaj Anga. He had the support of the kingdom of the whole world. He had tremendous wealth. He was beautiful. He had a beautiful, his wife Sunita was the most beautiful woman alive. He had everything a man could have and more. But one thing went wrong. His son, beyond his control, was not a proper devotee. And therefore, his whole life was miserable. But then he began to think, actually, this is Krishna's mercy. Because if my son was a nice boy, I would be so much attached to him. And therefore, I would also be so much attached to my wife, and I would be so much attached to my home, and my opulence, wealth, and kingdom. And human form of life is meant to become detached from everything but Krishna. So this is really the blessing of the Lord. Because now I'm so frustrated and miserable and disgusted with everything of this material world, I just want to leave it all and surrender to Krishna. And that's just what he did. In the middle of the night, without speaking anything to anyone, with the name of the Lord in his heart and the remembrance of his mercy in his mind, he left into the forest to perform tapasya. And meanwhile, all the people in the kingdom, they were, the next morning, they wanted their king, they loved their king. All the citizens were searching frantically here, there, and everywhere, but they couldn't find him. So they did not know what to do. And meanwhile, because the state had no king, the rogues and the thieves just began to plunder everything, everywhere. Because unless there is a strong government, the evil people will take advantage of the innocent. The government must be strong. But it must be strong on the basis of religious principles, not concocted principles. So the great sages, headed by Bhrigu Muni, they live in the upper planets, but in those days, they would actually oversee the governments of all the different planets in the universe. And they saw that there was a great problem on the Earth planet. So they decided that Maharaj Anga only had one child, Vena. And he is a descendant of Dhruva Maharaj. He has that very exalted blood in his ancestry. So we should make Vena the king. So the great sages arranged to coronate King Vena. And after he was coronated, he was actually at the beginning apparently quite righteous, but then all of the opulences and all of the luxuries and all of the fame that came to him completely spoiled his consciousness. He became totally intoxicated. Because when an unqualified person is given adoration and worship, he starts thinking himself to be something he isn't. So King Vena declared that he was God. And he made laws, international laws. From this day on, no one will perform any yajna to anyone except me. No yajnas to the demigods, no yajnas to Vishnu, only to me. And severe punishment for anyone. No chanting of any mantras, no giving in charity to anyone. There is only one religious principle in this age, and that is to worship and obey me. And in this way, he was spoiling religious principles. And the Brahmins were being so terribly frightened and persecuted, they were not allowed to do anything for the benefit of humanity. They weren't even allowed to preach. So the great saints and sages, the same persons who put him in his position as the king, they came before him. Prabhupada says, generally, Brahmins and Vaishnavas, they never get involved in political affairs. But sometimes in a state of severe emergency, they may come in for some time just to try to help the innocent citizens. So they very respectfully approached the king and told him, what you are doing is not good. Actually, the king is meant to follow the dictation of the learned sages who are repeating the words of God from the scriptures. And it is by yajna, it is by performance of proper sacrifice that the Lord is pleased, and the demigods are pleased when the Lord is pleased, and then there is rains, and there is proper food, and everything becomes auspicious. If you rule your citizens in this way, according to your ancestors, like Anga and Dhruva Maharaj and Swayambhu Manu and others, if you follow in their footsteps, your whole kingdom will flourish and you will attain the highest destination in life and be peaceful. But if you go on in this course, you will destroy everything. So please listen to us. They gave very compassionate and good advice with great respect. But a person who is infatuated by his own ego cannot listen to the good advice of anyone. Maharaj Vena, upon hearing this, he became furious. He said, what is this? Like foolish, uneducated children, these Brahmins think that they can instruct me. I am the king. I am the father. I am the supreme. You talk about worshiping God and the demigods. All the gods and all the demigods are part and parcel of me. I am the supreme. The king is the embodiment of all gods. I am the supreme personality of Godhead. And therefore, all rituals, all charities, everything must be in my name for my satisfaction. And anyone who does not follow this principle will be tortured and punished. When the sages heard this, they were so broken-hearted and at the same time dissatisfied and angry that they came together and they decided he must be killed. For the sake of humanity, he must be killed. So the sages came together, the Brahmins, and they began to chant special mystical mantras. And those mantras killed Maharaj Venu. They didn't have to use fists or clubs or knives or swords or guns or bombs. All they had to do was chant, hum, the syllable hum, and he was killed. So Sunita, Mrityu's daughter, was very much attached to Vena. Because even though he was a rascal, still motherly love is sometimes quite blind. So she took Maharaj Vena's body and she put it in preservatives and different oils to keep it in its state of a dead corpse. And the sages left, they performed their duty. But then again, the world was out a king, and the rogues and the thieves and the dacoits, they just started plundering everyone and everything. And the whole planet was in turmoil, and the earth herself was being so much exploited that she was withdrawing all of her opulences. Meanwhile, after some time, the great rishis and sages and brahmins, they saw that everywhere there was just dust being risen in the air from the rogues and thieves running with all of the things they were stealing. So they decided there has to be another king. This anarchy is not, it is not a compassionate way to let the people suffer like this. So they decided this king should be a descendant of Brahma, Swayambhuva Manu, Uttanapada, Dhruva Maharaj, so many others. Chakshusha Manvantar was also one of the forefathers of Anga. So they decided by their mystic powers to get a son from the body of Vena. And by chanting mantras, they began to first churn the thighs of the legs of Maharaj Vena. They got his body from his mother, Sunita. And by churning the thighs, a very, very mysterious personality came out. He had black complexion. His hair was copper colored. He had flat nose. He was very short. He had a protruding belly. He had red eyes. And his name was Bahuka. And he said to the sages, "How may I serve you?" And they said, "Sit down." So he sat down. This Bahuka was the beginning of the Nishada race, of whom the Kiratas and other types of human beings were descendants of. And he was actually, all the sins in Vena's body were churned out into this form. But there's a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, Kirata Hunandra Pulinda Pulkasa Abhira Sumba Yavanakashadaya Yenye Chapapa Yirapashrayashraya Sudyanti Tasmoy Prabhavishnave Namaha. That even if one is born in these races of Kiratas or Sumba or Hundra or any of these others, Nishada races of sinful people, if one takes shelter of the lotus feet of a devotee of Lord Vishnu, he can achieve the ultimate destination of pure unalloyed devotion and go back to the spiritual world. After freeing Maharaj Vena's body from all of his negativity, then they began to churn his arms. And as they churned his arms, two most illustrious, beautiful personalities emerged. One was Maharaj Prichu, and the other was, who was the incarnation of Lord Vishnu, and the other was the incarnation of the goddess of fortune, whose name was Arachi. They were so beautiful, so full of all good qualities, that the sages decided to immediately coronate him as king and Arachi as queen. And the sages and Brahmins told the reciters of hymns to begin to praise them. So they were praising because he was a Shaktivesh avatar. Shaktivesh avatar means that he was not Vishnu tattva, he was Jiva tattva. He was a living entity, but he was especially descended from the spiritual world with the powers and opulences of God himself. That is Shaktivesh avatar. And Archie was Shaktivesh of Lakshmi. She was a Jivatma, but she was endowed with the powers and the glories of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi herself. And they began to praise him so wonderfully. And Prithu Maharaj, who was truly an embodiment of all good qualities, he said, "Why are you praising me? It is not good to give me so much praise, because I haven't done anything yet. You should wait to see whether I do something before honoring me as an avatar and honoring me as a great king." In this way, Prithu Maharaj demonstrated the qualities of a great soul. They do not want to artificially take praise and glory that is not their own. They are not at all interested in such. They are interested in service and not glorification. And also, he wanted to teach society that in the future there will be hundreds and thousands, millions of people who will declare themselves to be God. And there will be millions and millions of people who declare their gurus to be God. But are they demonstrating the qualities of God? Anyone can talk, anyone can make claims, anyone could praise others. But the substance is actually the qualities that one possesses. So Maharaj Prithu wanted to show that unless one someone actually shows by their lifestyle that they are incarnation of God, then they can be praised in this way. A person should not be praised for something he has not done. And I have not done anything. He was just born. But at the time he appeared, all the demigods came, even Brahma, and they saw his hands and his feet, and they could understand he is Vishnu avatar. And after saying this, all the great sages and the reciters of hymns were so satisfied to see his humility, and then they began to praise him more and more. And as they praised him, they prophesied what his glorious deeds would be in the future. In this way, Prithu Maharaj satisfied all of his citizens. After the coronation, the people of the kingdom approached him. And when Maharaj Prithu saw them, he was so compassionate toward them, because everyone in the world was emaciated. They were skinny, because there was nothing to eat. And they came before Maharaj Prithu and said, "We're starving. There's no food anywhere. There's no rain coming. There's no seeds coming from the earth. We are all on the verge of death. You are our king. We are coming to you for protection. Please help us." Maharaj Prithu was very thoughtful. After he heard what they had spoken, for some time he just stood in deliberation and meditation on what could be done to serve his citizens. Then he became very angry, and he took his bow and arrow. Actually, when they praised Prithu Maharaj, they praised him in so many ways. They told him that, "Just like the sun god, you will distribute your mercy to everyone without discrimination. And just like the sun god, the sun extracts water for 8 months from the oceans, and then during the 4 months of the rainy season gives all that water back." Said similarly, a good government leader will extract taxes, every paisa of those taxes will come back to the citizens for their welfare. They will not take a paisa for themselves. That is a government leader. And this is what Prithu Maharaj will embody. And like the earth, like the deity, the demigod of the earth, Maharaj Prithu will be such a king that even those who trample upon him and abuse him, he will tolerate them and provide for them and maintain them with great love and compassion. And like Indra, the god of rain, he will arrange for profuse rains to come. And even if Indra doesn't give it, by his power he will make it rain. And like Varuna, a good king, like Prithu Maharaj, knows how to keep things confidential. Varuna, his whole abode is covered by the ocean. No one knows where it is, where his riches are, how much he has in his treasury. He said, similarly, the king should be like this. He should always have the power to keep things confidential that are meant to be confidential, and when the time is right, he always has whatever's necessary for the welfare of his citizens. And like the god of the air is inside and outside of everything. In the same way, Prithu Maharaj, he will know the needs and the desires of every one of his citizens, what they are thinking within their hearts, and what they require from outside. Such a king he will be. And the demigods awarded him so many gifts. They were giving him all of his paraphernalia. Each demigod was giving. But Prithu Maharaj understood that all the benedictions and all the gifts that he had was only for the service of his citizens, in the service of God. So he took his bow and arrow and he pointed it to the earth and he exclaimed, "Earth, because you are hiding the seeds and the herbs and the plants and the food grains that Lord Brahma has impregnated within you, and you are not giving it to the citizens, you are transgressing the principle of compassion, and therefore you deserve to be destroyed." And the goddess of the earth began to tremble in fear. And just to protect herself, she came in the personified form of a cow. And she started to run away. And Prithu Maharaj, with his bow and arrow ready to shoot, he started chasing after her. And this cow was a celestial cow. It was Earth herself. She ran all over the Earth, and she went to the higher planets and was running in and between the different heavenly planets. And wherever she went, Prithu was right behind her with his bow and arrow. And when the mother goddess Earth understood there was nowhere she can go where Prithu was not there, she turned to him and she said that you should not harm me, because it is the duty of a king to protect women, and I'm a female. And besides that, the cow is a symbol of religion, and a king will never hurt a cow. So please, it is not right for you to threaten me in this way. And King Prithu, in great anger, he replied, "Because you are sinful, and because you are cheating others and causing pain to others, therefore you deserve to die." And she said, "But consider, I'm maintaining everyone on this planet. If you kill me, this whole planet will go back into the Garbha Ocean, and everyone will drown." And Prithu replied, "By my own power, I will support and maintain the planet Earth." You are not performing your service, and it is the duty of the king to make sure everyone performs their duties. So Mother Earth, in the form of a cow, became very humble. And she said to Maharaj Prithu, "Actually, it's not that I want to hide all the herbs and grains, but I have no choice, because I am a devotee of Lord Vishnu. I am the property of Vishnu. When Brahma created me, it was in a service to Lord Vishnu. This whole material existence is simply the property of Vishnu for the satisfaction of Vishnu. And whatever grains, whatever fruits, whatever vegetables, whatever comes from me, whatever minerals and jewels that I provide, I am offering them all to the Lord. And human society is meant to take these gifts from me and on my behalf offer them to God. But they are not doing that. Maharaj Vena was king. He stopped all yajna. He was exploiting everything I had and using it for his own personal selfish interests. He was using everything I had to cause pain to others. And after Vena left, this whole world for a long time has been simply been run by thieves and rogues, and irreligion has been prominent. I cannot give anything if it is not offered for the satisfaction of the Lord. I must hide it from these thieves and rogues. But you are a great king, and everything you do is for the satisfaction of Krishna. And you are ruling your kingdom in such a way that everything will be used in harmony with the will of Krishna. Therefore, I will give everything to you in great abundance. But please know, for a cow to give milk, she has to have a calf she is affectionate toward. And due to affection for the calf, milk will come from the cow's udder for everyone's satisfaction and nourishment. She said, similarly, I am the goddess of earth. When I am affectionate toward the people who are living on me, I can provide unlimited abundance of everything. But when I am disgraced and disheartened by the activities coming upon me, then it is my nature to withdraw it. And Srila Prabhupada explains here, this is the condition of today's society. There is actually no shortage of anything but Krishna consciousness. The earth can supply so much. The great acharyas explain that this whole conception of the problem of the world being overpopulation is nonsense. This earth can provide for millions of times more than there are people on this earth. This idea of overpopulation. Anywhere, any country in the world you go, the cities are crowded. People are just crawling out of each other. Traffic jams and pollution. There's no space. The buildings just go higher and higher and higher into the sky so that they can get some place to sleep and to eat and mate and defend. But then as soon as you leave the cities, practically everything's this beautiful countryside and forests. America's 98% just countryside and forests and fields. India, when you go on the trains, it's mostly just fields and countryside. Every country in the world, there's so much. But the earth is not providing in abundance. That is the problem. And why the earth is not providing in abundance? Anad bhavanti bhutani parajanyana nashamba. It is explained in Bhagavad Gita that all living beings, they survive on the basis of the food grains born of the earth. But those food grains are born from rain that falls from the sky. And rain is born of sacrifice. When the Mother Earth sees, when she is affectionate toward the people living on the earth, she can supply everything. We have such an impersonalistic idea of existence. The scientists just explain everything in such a depersonalized way. And this is the problem. If we understand that there are demigods supplying, and the earth herself is a person who controls the activities of this planet, and when she is affectionate toward us and satisfied by our piety, by our charity, by our devotion, she can supply everything. And when she's not, she will not. And therefore today, there are so many plagues. There are earthquakes. What is the earthquake? Just the reaction of the earth to show that she's not satisfied with human society. And there's volcanoes. And there's terrible droughts. And sometimes there's terrible floods. And sometimes she creates all these different kinds of insects that just destroy and all plants. And in order to counteract them, people use all kinds of chemicals which cause terrible, deadly diseases and just destroy all nutrition. And then people's brains just don't even function properly. And you have all these diseases like cancer and AIDS and terrible. They're all reactions. And the big, big people, they are saying the problem is overpopulation. Therefore, abortion, family planning, contraceptive. This is the answer. And by performing abortion and contraceptive, they're just displeasing Mother Earth more by totally interfering and intervening with natural ways and even murdering their own children. And this only exaggerates and intensifies the sinful reactions both individually and collectively upon the whole society of the planet. And so much cow slaughter. Mother Earth personifies herself as a cow. Mother Earth herself is accepts the position of a cow. And all over the world, they are tanking those cows that are the emblems of the Earth Mother herself. And they are, we cannot even speak in the temple room what they do to them. Terrible. And they train their children to eat flesh. Let the child go to the slaughterhouse and see where it comes from. We have seen. Children come out of the slaughterhouse, they're weeping, they're crying, they're terrified. They can't stand seeing it. But then they go to McDonald's or some other place and they're happily eating and little clowns dancing around. Demoniac society. And in order to feed all these cattle, they need so much land. 16 to 20 pounds of grain, if you feed to an animal, you get 1 pound of meat. 20 pounds of grain, our whole temple can be fed for days. 1 pound of meat, one meal for one person. And these greedy, money-hungry, insensitive people who run these corporations and these industries, they're cutting down the rainforest. South America and Brazil and these places, most of the rain is due to the rainforest. They're actually energizing the earth by the vegetation, the greenery. They're cutting them down and cutting them down. There's practically hardly anything left just to grow grains to feed cows to kill. This is Mother Earth. The scriptures are explaining how we should treat her and love her as a mother, and how if we do that, she will treat us with the affection of her own son, her own daughter. But today's society, in the name of solving problems, they are creating the most treacherous problems. So Mother Earth explained that I will give you everything because you are truly a devotee of the Lord. She said, but I have to have an affectionate calf that will come before me, because when I am pleased and affectionate, I can give anything. And also bring a pot to hold the milk that I give. So Prithu Maharaj brought Swayambhuva Manu to take the role of a calf. And he himself, with his cupped hands, he placed it under the udder of Mother Earth. And then all grains and foods and herbs and vegetables and fruits started pouring from her. And then all the different classes of living beings all wanted to get the benedictions of the earth. The sages, headed by, had Brihaspati take the form of calf. And then she started giving all nice ghee for sacrifice.
and she gave religious principles and the teachings of the Vedas came from her to the sages, and they were nourished by that. And then the demigods, they had Indra take the role of a calf, and Somaras came out from her to give strength and power to the demigods to perform their service to the Lord. Also, satisfaction. And then the demons, the asuras, they had Prahlad Maharaj take the role of a calf. Because the idea is you must make the earth affectionate for her to give her goods. And to nourish the demons, liquor came out. And then the Gandharvas and the Apsaras, they came. And one of them took the role of calf. And then all the skills of music and art came from her. And this way, Bhagavatam, long description of all the different classes of people and how she satisfied all their desires, because the king, Maharaj Prithu, was such a compassionate and God-conscious leader. She felt confident. In this way, Maharaj Prithu was so satisfied with Mother Earth, and Mother Earth was so satisfied with Maharaj Prithu. And the blessings of the Lord were upon everyone in the kingdom. Then Maharaj Prithu decided, for the benefit of all of his citizens, he would perform 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas. Now, Ashwamedha Yajna is called a horse sacrifice. And the Vedas explain, what is this horse sacrifice? It is a very, very... First of all, before you can perform such a yajna, you have to conquer the whole world. There can be no challenge. If there's anyone in the earth that can challenge you, you cannot perform this yajna. Every king, every ruler, every leader has to bow at your lotus feet and say, I am your servant. Who can perform such a yajna today? And then a tremendous amount of wealth and paraphernalia is necessary. And yajna is ultimately only meant for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everything should be done with great devotion, and every mantra has to be meticulously enunciated in such a way that if there's a slightest mistake in one syllable of one Brahmin out of sometimes hundreds of Brahmins, the yajna will not be successful. This is the expression of their devotion to do things so well. And if it is done well, then they test the mantra by taking a horse, an old horse, with a beautiful golden apparatus, and they cut off the head of the horse. But then, right before everyone's eyes, instantly, the horse is given a new, beautiful body and new life. So they don't kill it at all. But if there was any mistake and the horse doesn't come right back to life, everything is a failure and the whole yajna is simply tinged with sin. And when such yajnas were performed in such a way, the Lord Vishnu would personally come to accept the devotional offerings, and the demigods would also come to accept the devotional offerings. And if they didn't all come, the yajna was not effective. So to perform one Ashwamedha yajna was such an incredible accomplishment. Maharaj Prithu decided to perform 100, one after another. But in this age of Kali Yuga, impossible. Therefore, in the age of Kali Yuga, Ashwamedha Yajna, Gomedha Yajna, they are totally condemned. They are not allowed at all. Because first of all, there is no such qualified Brahmins who can chant the mantras in this way. There is no one who could conquer the whole world in this way. The ingredients and paraphernalia required are not available. And what to speak, nobody can even bring the horse back to life. But Prabhupada explains,
There are places where they do these offerings. He said, it is all such nonsense. Prabhupada explains in Calcutta there is a place called Kali Ghat. And there on festival days, hundreds and hundreds of goats and buffaloes are like this, blood flowing everywhere. This is not at all in any way according to the Shastras. According to the Shastras, for those in Tamaguna, steeped in the mode of ignorance, they have to say to the animal, on the moonless night only, when there is no moon, the most inauspicious time, they say, because I'm doing this to you, in your next life you will kill me and eat me. And by saying that in the animal's ear, you're supposed to gradually come to your senses and say, why am I doing this? And they call it Kali Prasad. But Srila Prabhupada said, it is not Kali Prasad. They are all an illusion. Because Kali is the consort of Shiva. And Shiva is Vaishnavanam Yathashambhu. Shiva is a Vaishnava. Shiva only eats pure vegetarian food that is offered to Krishna and his Mahaprasad. He will not ever touch anything else. And Kali will only take the remnants of Shiva. So she will only take Vishnu's Mahaprasad. So what to do with all these animals that are being offered? Says Kali will not touch it. She will not look at it. What she does is the ghouls and the ghosts and the rakshashas that worship Shiva on the astral plane, she gives all that to them. So when you go to Kali Ghat or any of these other places where they're taking this from animal slaughter, they are giving you prasad. It is the prasad of ghosts and rakshashas. Durga and Kali will not touch it. Therefore, these sacrifices are impossible in this age of Kali. Yajyai sankirtana priyaya janti hi shamegasha. In the age of Kali, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has revealed from the scriptures there is only one sacrifice that is allowed and effective, and that is the congregational chanting of the holy names. Because this sacrifice will purify the heart, and the Lord will descend in the sound of his name when it is offered with devotion in a mood of service and bring all auspiciousness to the whole world. Therefore, the propagation of the holy name of Krishna is the most necessary form of welfare in a whole human society. When people are freed from greed, when people are compassionate, when people develop godly qualities through the chanting of the holy names, they want to serve. It is service to the Lord. It is compassion to others that pleases the Lord. And the chanting of the holy name cleans the heart, so we have these qualities. But we have to have these qualities. Someone who is cruel to others and not serving and who's chanting and thinks that I'll go back to Godhead because I'm doing the Yuga Dharma is an illusion. Service to the Lord, service to his devotees, and compassionate to others is what pleases the Lord. And chanting the holy names cleans our hearts so we can have these qualities. But we must demonstrate these qualities. We must strive to demonstrate these qualities. The Lord is so pleased to descend in his name to cleanse our hearts so we can be humble servants. If we are offensive to others, if we are cruel to others, don't think that your chanting of the holy names will bring you back to Godhead. It is nonsense. Unless we live as Vaishnavas, as servants. But we cannot do that without chanting the holy names. The holy name is the Yuga Dharma because it inspires the godly qualities from within the heart by which we can serve the Lord and his devotees. Please the Lord, and that is the greatest need in human society. We serve in order to chant purely. We chant in order to serve purely. They are inseparable. It is all for the pleasure of Krishna. So Maharaj Paritu performed 99 Ashwamedha Yajnas. Should I continue tomorrow or should I continue now? Huh? You can all stay long enough, no problem. You're not getting tired. Swarup Damodar is dancing to stay awake. On your order, I will continue. So Indra, the king of heaven, he was famous throughout the universe as the only person who has ever performed 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas. And this is a very, very prestigious position. Can you imagine to be the only person in the whole universe to have accomplished such a feat? And when you put so much time and so much energy and become so famous and get so much prestige, you don't like to share that with anyone else. So Indra became envious because he saw that Prithu Maharaj was about to match him. And he didn't want that. He wanted to be the exclusive, greatest for everyone to adore. So what he did is when the 100th yajna was about to be performed, Indra disguised himself and stole the sacrificial horse. And Atri Muni happened to see it. And he told Maharaj Prithu that Indra has stolen your horse. You must get it back. He must be punished. He should be killed for what he's doing. He's so envious. So the son of Maharaj Prithu got on his chariot and started chasing after Indra and the horse. And when Indra saw that he was about to be killed by Prithu Maharaj's son, he changed his form into that of a sannyasi. He was wearing saffron clothes and he had matted hair. And Prithu Maharaj's son was trained by his father to honor sadhus. So he started bowing down to Indra. And then he let him go. And then Atri Muni said, "Why you did like that? He's stealing your horse. He's Indra. He's cheating. He's pretending to be a sadhu, but he's a criminal. He should be killed." So then the son of Prithu Maharaj became very angry again by Atri Muni's words, and he started chasing after Indra, and Indra disappeared and left the horse. So the horse was brought back, and everyone praised the son of Prithu Maharaj, and they gave him the name Vichitashva, which means one who is victorious, successful. And then they were about to perform the yajna, and Indra created total darkness everywhere. And in the darkness, he stole the horse again. Then he was flying through the sky with the horse. And again, Atri Muni, he saw it. He was a sage. He said, "Indra stole the horse. There he is." So the son of Prithu Maharaj again started chasing after him. Then again, he changed himself into another type of sannyasi. In saffron clothes, this time he had skulls around him. Like that, tantric sannyasi. And Prithu Maharaj's son, immediately upon seeing saffron robes, he bowed down and offered respects. Indra left. And then Atri Muni said, "What are you doing? He's Indra. He's fooling you. He's cheating you. Kill him." So then he got up and he started running after Indra with his bow and arrow. And then Indra disappeared and left the horse. And he brought the horse back. They were about to perform the yajna. Again, darkness came. Again, Indra stole the horse. Again, he started chasing after him. Atri Muni was always right there telling, "Get him." And again, he changed himself into another type of a sannyasi. And again, he bowed down. And again, Atri Muni said, stop this bowing down, kill him. He's not a sannyasi, he's bogus. And again he went, and again Indra disappeared. And this went on and on and on. And Prithu Maharaja's son just couldn't kill one who was a sadhu. So Indra kept stealing the horse. And Atri Muni was very, very upset. Because he saw that Prithu Maharaj was a compassionate, selfless soul, and Indra was envious of him, and he should be punished. So finally, Prithu Maharaj himself attacked Indra when he took the horse. And Indra understood he was about to die. And he was all dressed up as sannyasis and all different types of sannyasis, and Prithu just said, you deserve to die. You will be punished for this irreligious activity. And the Srimad Bhagavatam says that all the different bogus sects of religion came from descendants of all these different forms that Indra took. There are so many different sampradayas coming from Indra in the form of these irreligious people. We see there are all kinds of naked sannyas. Sometimes Indra was naked. Sometimes he was holding skulls. All these tantrics and all of these other types of so-called people, they are, in the name of religion, they are cheating others. And the origin came from Indra. It's due to envy, not due to compassion and love. So, at that time, the great sages, when they saw that Prithu was about to punish Indra, they said, actually, this yajna is only, you're only supposed to kill a horse. You're not supposed to kill Indra. So please, you'll spoil the whole yajna if you kill him. He said, we'll kill him ourselves. He said, in a nonviolent way, we will just chant a mantra, and through this mantra, he will be forced to enter into the fire of yajna and burn. So Prithu said, all right. And the sages started chanting their mantras, and when they were just about to offer the oblation, which would make Indra fall into the fire, at that moment, Lord Brahma appeared. And Lord Brahma told the sages and told Prithu Maharaj, you should not harm Indra. He said, he's a devotee. He's just mixed up and envious. And proud, but he's a devotee. And you were all devotees together, we should not fight. And besides that, every time you try to do this yajna, he's creating more and more irreligion in the world. So Maharaj Prithu, it is best if you just be satisfied with 99 yajnas and let Indra have the highest score. For the sake of cooperation and unity. So, Maharaj Prithu accepted Lord Brahma's suggestion, and he stopped any attempt to perform a 100th Ashwamedha Yajna. And Lord Krishna, Vishnu, was so pleased by this renunciation of Prithu Maharaj that Vishnu personally appeared on his bird carrier Garuda and congratulated Maharaj Prithu. He explained to Maharaj Prithu that I am so pleased with you because the sacrifice of your willingness to take a humble position, a secondary position, for the purpose of cooperation and unity is a higher sacrifice than being number one and performing the greatest amount of yajnas. He said, you are both my devotees. And sometimes amongst devotees there may be competition and there may be envy. But the purpose of a devotee's life is to please Krishna. And Krishna is not pleased when the competition turns into envy Therefore, devotees must make some sorts of adjustments by which there is unity and harmony and friendship amongst themselves and love amongst themselves rather than envy. And whoever is most instrumental in creating that atmosphere actually performs the greatest sacrifice and is the most pleasing to Krishna and gets the highest blessings of Krishna. Because you have been willing to renounce this eternal fame of performing 100 yajñas for the sake of pleasing me by cooperating with other devotees, even if they are envious devotees, still, you are my devotees. You should stop fighting. And because you have performed this renunciation, Lord Vishnu said, you will become more famous than Indra for not performing the yajna than he is than for performing all these yajnas. Prithu Maharaj ki. Srila Prabhupada said, you can show your love for me by how you cooperate. And who is Srila Prabhupada? Srila Prabhupada is the representative of Krishna. Whatever we love we show to Prabhupada is what love we show to Krishna. So Krishna has revealed that the cooperation and the loving friendship amongst devotees is what pleases him the most. And in the name of becoming number one, in the name of being big, in the name of great scores, in the name of getting big position, on any level, if it encourages envy and deceit and disharmony, it is not pleasing to Krishna. Prabhupada encouraged transcendental competition, not mundane competition. And we have to understand, what does transcendental mean? Transcendental means transcendental above the modes of material nature. To be transcendental means no greed, no lust, no pride, no envy, no illusion, no anger. That's transcendental. Competition without those aspects is transcendental competition. If those aspects are involved, it is competition, mundane competition. Transcendental competition means we compete with one another to make the others more inspired to do more than us. Let me work so hard so everyone else wants to do more, and let them all do more than me. Because the more that's done, the more service is offered to Guru Maharaj and Krishna. We are not concerned with me getting credit, or with us getting number one scores, or number one this, or number one that, or big position. We are only concerned with pleasing Guru Maharaj and Krishna. And the more service is done for humanity, is the more they're pleased. So we compete to encourage one another, so more and more and more preaching is offered to the world. And then Krishna's pleased. Guru's pleased. But it has to be done in a spirit of service and harmony and respect. Otherwise, we should not defeat the purpose by coming on the material platform. So Lord Vishnu praised Prithu Maharaj and gave him all blessings. And he stopped his yajna. And then the Lord Prithu Maharaj worshipped Lord Vishnu with great devotion. And Lord Vishnu gave him the benediction that he would always remember him in pure unalloyed devotion. And then after this, Vishnu left. After giving so many blessings upon the Lord and all human society. And after Vishnu left, Prithu Maharaj, after some time, he decided to perform a different type of yajna. Not Ashwamedha yajna, a different type of yajna. And in this yajna, he took off all his kingly robes and put on the robes of a mendicant. He put on deerskin and kushi grass ring. He was serving the Brahmins. And he began to explain. And at that time, the four Kumaras descended. Effulgent from the sky, they just descended into the yajna. And Prithu Maharaj worshipped the four Kumaras. He first, in great humility, he bowed his head at their feet, and then he sat them in a nice place, and he washed their feet and offered beautiful prayers to them. And Prithu Maharaj began to extol the glories of the Kumaras, who were so merciful that they had come just to purify and sanctify his life and his kingdom. And he said, I am a Grihastha. The purpose of a Grihastha's life is simply to serve great souls like you. He said, when a great souls like you come to a house, greedy people who are too much attached to material sense gratification, who do not invite great souls to their home and wash their feet and serve them, he said, their house is no better than a tree filled with venomous snakes. But that home that welcomes and serves great devotees, the home becomes a holy place. All the people within the home become holy and auspicious. Their whole lives, everything becomes auspicious. So by your mercy, you are giving us this chance to serve you. And the four Kumaras, after hearing beautiful, beautiful prayers of Prithu Maharaj, gave him the benediction. The supreme and only goal of life is to always fix your mind in the lotus feet of Lord Hari. And the only way to properly worship the feet of Hari is to become the servant of the devotees, to serve the Brahmins, to serve the Vaishnavas, is the highest service to the Lord. And after bestowing their ultimate benedictions and initiating Prithu Maharaj into the Kumar Sampradaya, authorized Sampradaya, the Kumaras ascended to the heavens. And after receiving these wonderful benedictions, Prithu Maharaj began to instruct all of his citizens. He said that everyone should follow their particular duties according to Varna and Ashram. The Varnashram Dharma system must be very carefully practiced by all members of society. And whatever Varna or Ashram we have, it should always be done for the purpose of the ultimate goal of life, and that is the satisfaction of Krishna. And the satisfaction of Krishna can only be done when there is love and respect toward his devotees and those who are dear to him, and compassion to all living beings. He explained that it is the duty of a king and any respectable person to see every woman as his mother, to respect his wife as half of his own body, to respect the old and serve them. And there are two types of old, Prabhupada says. One is people who are old in age, who are helpless, and who require the protection of those who are strong. And the other is old in knowledge, those who are wise, those who are learned. They should also be protected and served very carefully. And then he explained that as for myself, my own body is dedicated simply to the service of the Vaishnavas, the devotees, to take their instructions as my life and soul and to serve them. And through this process, to be compassionate to all living beings. And Prithu Maharaj exclaimed to all of his citizens that the dust from the feet of the Vaishnavas I will always keep on the top of my crown. That is my aspiration in life, to be their servant. In this way, Prithu Maharaj extolled the highest virtues of how everyone together can achieve the supreme goal of life, of Krishna consciousness. After ruling the world for many years, Maharaj Prithu began to become old. And as he was growing old, he understood Yadyarachariti srestas tadar evetarochana. Sayat pramanam kurute lokastarana vartate. What the great men do, the common people will follow. This was the principle he lived by his whole life. And he wanted to set an example. When his children were old enough, he gave one of his sons the kingdom, and then he and his wife, Arachi, left all the opulences. Actually, one thing is very important. When the four Kumaras were being worshipped by Prithu Maharaj, before they left, Prithu Maharaj said to them that I want to offer you everything, but what can I offer? Whatever I have is yours. If someone gives you something to eat and you chew it, you don't give it back to the person. He said, everything I have is yours. What is respectful for me to give back to you? But nevertheless, whatever I have, he said to the four Kumaris, I surrender to you. It is all your property. I give you my wife as your property. My wife, my life, my home, my wealth, my kingdom, my citizens, they are all yours. You tell me how I can serve you. To offer everything to Guru and the Vaishnavas in this way is the highest perfect religious principle. So when he entered into the forest with Arachi, the beloved goddess of fortune, the kingdom went on by his blessings and his instructions. And they went deep into the jungles. And Prithu Maharaj, he stopped eating. He stopped drinking. Gradually. First he was just eating fruits. Then he was just eating dried leaves. Then he was eating only little water. Then he was only taking air. Then he even stopped breathing. And Archie was following all the tapasyas with her husband. Although she was a princess, she was a queen, it was very, very difficult and hard for her to live by these austerities. But it is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam that she was in transcendental joy just helping her husband. She didn't care, she didn't mind what kind of sufferings her body or mind had to go through. Her love and her ecstasy was simply in helping her husband in any situation in life. So Prithu Maharaj, through his intensified meditation on the Lord within his heart, he amalgamated all of the different ingredients of his body into one another and into his mind. And ultimately, by his mystic transcendental meditation, his body became consumed with fire. No, actually, I'm sorry. What happened is this. He amalgamated all the elements of his body into the personality of Godhead, and then he surrendered his heart, his soul, his life to the personality of Godhead, and in that mood, he left his body. Returned to the spiritual world. And when Archie saw her husband die, disappear, she was overcome with grief. But she understood what was her duty. And she made a funeral pyre for her husband, Prithu Maharaj. And then she bathed in the river Saraswati. And she came out and she offered prayers to the Lord, to the Brahmins, to the Vaishnavas, to her husband. And then she personally set his body on fire. And as the body was burning, with the thought of her husband and the personality of Godhead in her heart, she circumambulated the fire several times. And then chanting the holy name of the Lord, she laid her own body in the flames of her husband. And when the demigods, who were all watching, nobody else knew, this was in the recluse places in the jungles, but the demigods were watching. And when they saw this, they began to shower flowers. And the wives of the demigods began to praise Archie, the personification of chastity and devotion. How she underwent so much difficulty, and therefore she will be promoted to the kingdom of God. And there was a beautiful Vaikuntha airplane that was taking Prithu to the world of Vaikuntha. And just behind him was an airplane with Archie. And in this way, the demigods saw Prithu and Archie enter into the world of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This wonderful narration was given by Maitreya Muni to Vidura. And it was explained, this narration, to Maharaj Parikshit through Shukadeva Goswami. And it is explained that anyone who hears this beautiful narration of the life and qualities of Maharaj Prithu will be successful and victorious in all noble deeds, will become free from all the obstacles of material illusion, will attain pure unmotivated love for God within his heart, and at the end of life will certainly go back home, back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai!
Thank you very much.